Let's call this meeting of the House Resources Committee to order. The time is 1:06 p.m. Members present at this time, Representative Sarah Hannan, Representative Dave Tallarico, Representative Ivy Sponholz, Representative George Rauscher, Vice Chair Representative Greyer Hopkins, Co-Chair Representative John Lincoln, and myself, Representative Tarr. Please let the record reflect that we do have a quorum to conduct business. We have one item before us for consideration today. That's going to be House Bill 218, the Saltwater Fishing Operators and Guides. And pardon me for not thanking Ms. Debbie Tillinghast, our recording secretary. Thank you. And our LIO moderator, Taylor Kelly. Thank you so much. The House Bill 280 invasive species bill has been canceled. And just so people know, we're trying to be set up so that people can call in for meetings if that's a preference, and people feel more comfortable for that. And have just talked about, you know, what's allowed over the meeting, which includes hearing bills and voting on amendments, should we transition into something like that. But want to be very supportive of people calling in if we have any future meetings, if that's what you're more comfortable with. And just want to say that, because then the idea is that at least we would try to have one more meeting on Friday for the purposes of confirmation hearings. So as far as priority legislation and confirmation hearings, that would complete that work. We still do have other bills that I know could be priorities. Myself and Representative Tallarico, for example, and Representative Hannan have bills in this committee that I bet you might have liked to see move. So that's why I want to be sort of set up for if we can continue work telephonically and be nimble in that way to help people, you know, continue working on those priorities, but prioritize those other items as the sort of must do in the very immediate future. Representative Rauscher.
Chair Carr, did you purposely leave out voting on bills, or did you just omit that by mistake?
No, Representative Rauscher, we're actually right now under the uniform rules not allowed to vote on bills by participation over the phone, only allowed to vote on amendments. So it's, you know, it's possible at some point in the future there'd be a conversation about that policy, whether, you know, we needed to look at modifying that. But I just know as things are evolving that people have different comfort levels with being in public places and near other people. And so just want us, everybody to know, you know, we want to be as supportive as possible of that and let people participate by phone if that's what works best for you.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, so we did have the brief introduction to House Bill 218 the other day. So we have folks from the department on the line, and then we have the public testimony. So I'll just start with folks from the department. We have Commissioner Vincent Lang on the phone. We have Tom Talby, Deputy Director, Division of Sport Fishing, and Dave Ruck from the Department of Fish and Game. Are any of you interested in providing any comments at this time before we do the public testimony?
Madam Speaker, this is Doug Vincent Lang, Commissioner of Alaska Department of Fish and Game. Thank you for hearing this bill today. It certainly remains one of our priorities to move this forward. The bill basically provides funding for meeting some treaty obligations we have for both halibut and the Halibut Act, as well as salmon treaty obligations under the Pacific Salmon Treaty. And most of the issues that are associated with this, with the previous versions of this bill, were the freshwater piece, which we've eliminated out of it, and we appreciate your willingness to hear and potentially move forward this saltwater portion of it. Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner. Any questions for the Commissioner from committee members? Representative Hopkins has a question.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Commissioner. Are these, are all of these reporting requirements new to maintain the state's Pacific Salmon Treaty obligations? Or have they been in place for these saltwater people before, and we're extending the process?
Through the chair, they are exactly what was in place when this bill sunset. It's about a year or two ago.
Thank you.
Okay. Anybody else? Representative Hannan has a question.
Thank you, Chair. Commissioner, you, at the first hearing, I had asked how many saltwater guides there were, and you guys were going to get us a number.
Through the chair, I'm going to try to pass that question over to Tom Talby or Dave Rutz. I think Rachel was getting that information together to pass on to you. So,
yes, Mr. Chair, this is Tom Talby, Deputy Director, Division of Sport Fish. There's approximately 1,200, 1,300 saltwater guides and businesses. The split's about 800 guides and 400 businesses for saltwater only. And there's about an equal number of guides and businesses in freshwater.
Follow up?
Yep. Deputy Commissioner, through the chair, can you tell me how many, do you have a sense of the number that are both saltwater and freshwater guides?
Through the chair, Representative Hannon, no, we do not. Because there's no logbook data for the freshwater, and the registration program is not specific to freshwater or saltwater. It's just they're getting a guide registration. At this time, we do not have the information on how many are operating both fresh and saltwater.
Okay. Thank you. Okay. Representative Rauscher?
Yeah, Madam Chair, I heard that the only difference was something to do with fees, and I was just wondering if we could expound on that just a little bit. And then we have a January fiscal note here or two, and I was wondering, are those still correct if we're talking about fees?
Commissioner, could you start with that from Representative Rauscher?
So the fee structure is higher than what it was when the bill sunsetted, but we tried to structure the fee cost to basically recover the cost of the logbook program. The fiscal note is current from the version you have should be the most current version of the logbook fiscal note that we have, unless I'm wrong, and I'll turn this over to Dave Rutz, but I think it's the most current one that you have is still current.
Madam
Commissioner,
Chair,
I think
Madam
that
Chair, the date is January 27 on ours, so I just thought I'd make that out.
Yep,
you.
And Representative Rauscher, I do think that is because we're still with the A version of the bill. It hasn't been amended, so I think that fiscal note is prepared for the current version of the bill.
Okay, thank you very much.
Mm-hmm. Any other questions or comments? I'm going to go ahead and go to public testimony then now, and then we'll see if there are any other comments after that. Okay, it looks like we have a couple people online for public testimony. Forrest Braden from Southeast Alaska Guides Association in Ketchikan. Mr. Braden?
Yeah, thank you, Chair Tark. Members of the committee, Forrest Braden, Southeast Alaska Guides Organization, as stated. And we originally supported this bill. We still do support it, and it's somewhat conditional. I'll explain that as I move forward. But let me just start by saying the information that is gathered through this logbook program, which is a large portion of the cost of the program, guide operators registration is, I think, a small component. That data is crucial to the operation of the industry, to getting people up fishing from the lower 48, and which is a lot of the charter clientele at this point. So we definitely support that this program has to move forward. The parts that we're struggling with right now are, for one, my understanding with numerous conversations with the department is that, there's a component of the logbook where there's data collection on halibut. It includes signatures. Some of the real important criteria are why we're being really super specific about writing people's names down on licenses and everything is because the feds want to know exactly what the halibut release and harvest is, including gapfish. And so I don't know what portion of the logbook that represents, but it is a fair portion of the data entry and collection that goes on. And my understanding is that there is no subsidy to speak of that was formerly promised coming from National Marine Fisheries Service or NOAA to subsidize the program. So essentially the cost is, if we're increasing or shouldering the burden of the industry of this data collection, part of that was promised to be covered by NEMS. And so we're struggling with that a little bit. On the cost of the program itself, I just listened to 800, 400, so that's 1,200 total guides and businesses that are being registered. I wasn't sure what that number was. I know it costs a lot to run government programs. It seems like a fairly high fee structure, doubling from what we were used to a couple years ago. and perhaps you weren't covering all of the expenses of the program there. But it is kind of a shock to the industry, to be honest, that the fees are being doubled. But again, we do support that the program has to take place. I don't know if there's other avenues to collect money. There's some ideas out there of surcharges that have been on licenses in the past, and maybe there's a way that the public that are actually harvesting the fish can help to foot the bill here. I'm not sure what ideas we can come up with, but anyway, the program needs to happen, so we want to see it move forward, and I'll leave it at that.
Thank you, Mr. Braden. I want to go back to the double fee. So prior to the sunset of the program, the fees were half of what is suggested in this bill?
That's my understanding. Yeah, they were, because I pay them. And so for me, as a business operator combination guide, I was paying $200, and now I'll pay $4, and I've got two boats, and I've got another operator. Instead of paying $100 for him, I'll pay $200. So, you start scratching your head why the difference. But some of that's due to lack of funding in the department prior. I know that why that's been closed here. They've had to foot the bill without any fee collection. So,
and I didn't totally understand the point about the gap fish, and I just wondered if you could explain that slightly more, because I know in the Fisheries Committee the issue of rentals came up, and so the bareboat charters, is that where the gap fish are coming from?
So there's, if you look in the logbook, the columns, they have a halibut catch and release column, and then they also have a gaff guided angler fish column. So if there's a way for anglers to have extra opportunities to harvest halibut in a kind of a lease program where you take commercial quota and it converts to a sport fish. And so that data is also being collected and has to be interpreted or forwarded. So that's another burden that the logbook program office is having to, you know, to go through for the federal government. And I'm not hearing that there's any reciprocated funding for that.
Okay, and so that's where the National Marine Fisheries Service came in, that it had been previously suggested there'd be some support, and it's GAF, G-A-F, guided angler fishing is what you said, not GAP. That's what I couldn't make out.
Oh, right, and it's not exclusive to just that. I mean, it's the whole, anything halibut is federal, so, yeah, that information is being processed by the Department of Fish and Game, but being forwarded, and the requirement was from the federal government rather than having two logbooks.
Thank you. Any questions from committee members? Okay. Thank you, Mr. Braden. We appreciate your testimony today.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Next, we have Melvin Grove from the Prince William Sound Charter Boat Association. Mr. Grove?
Yes. Hopefully you can hear me.
Yep. Please state your name.
My name is Melvin Grove. Yeah. I'm the president of the Prince William Sound Charter Boat Association, which includes Valdez charters and Whittier charter boat operators. And all of our members strongly oppose this measure for a number of reasons. We've opposed this in the past, and they didn't pass it, and then they passed it a few years later because we pretty much just didn't fight against it. We left it go, but there was salt water and fresh water. nobody opposes throwing out the logbooks. One of the issues that we have is, you know, under the saltwater registry, if every angler, if we worked under the feds, the saltwater registry, we would be charged a $30 fee, and our clients would fish for free. They wouldn't even have to buy a fishing license if you fished in saltwater under the saltwater registry. You can look it up at the NOAA's webpage. But because the state has an agreement with the feds that they will collect data and charge a fishing license, which they make millions of dollars off all of our clients yearly. Part of that agreement is, you know, that they're gonna provide data to the Fed. Now they're saying it's an unfunded mandate, and they're using, even the North Council now uses our logbook data as more accurate information when it comes to halibut allocation. We've seen no more allocation. We've seen more and more restrictions because of the logbook data. But the problem with the state used to use the guide, I'm sorry, the harvest survey data, but everybody knows that that's kind of a joke that they currently spend on every saltwater guide survey that they send out, or all of, I shouldn't say just saltwater, but all fishing in Alaska survey data that gets sent out annually. I think they spend $400,000 or $500,000 a year on that program, and it's so inaccurate that even NOAA, or actually North Council, doesn't even use that data anymore. They use our logbook data. So, you know, why are we spending money on an outdated survey when we are providing the data for free? I mean, they don't pay us to collect the data. We actually don't even pay for the stamps. So, but we got to send the logbook information into. So, the other thing if you look at the fiscal note, I mean, according to that, there's $356,000 for personal services. I don't know how we're justifying that. My understanding, the state doesn't have to analyze the data. They can give it to NOAA or give it to the feds and let them analyze it. I also understand that the feds are supposed to be reimbursing the state for their information for the logbook program, any cost. So the question I would be asking is, what happens is when the feds do reimburse the state? Are charter operators going to be reimbursed? I really doubt it. I mean, this is typically, and we're basically the bottom line is, the money grab that the state, and you know, everybody's hurting budget wise, and this is just the fund revenue raiser that the department is trying to do. And I find it ironic that they're leaving out the freshwater guides this time, when in years past all the freshwater guides were included. But I think Doug Vince Lang, if I remember correctly, he said that they weren't using their data for any management purposes on the freshwater side. So, which I found interesting, if they weren't going to use freshwater logbook data, you know, what are they using? What are they using the standard harvest survey data for? But anyway, all of our members oppose this measure. It's unnecessary, and I mean, with the added restrictions that we're seeing, we're going to be cut 2 days a week this year, all summer long. I mean, we're losing money left and right, and just really can't afford to be spending any more money for this guide license fee. Again, nobody's opposed to the logbooks. Whatever the cost is to provide us a logbook, we'll fill it out and give it to them. Whatever the feds want to do with it as far as cost of analyzing it, then that will be up to them. So we oppose this measure strongly. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Grove. Appreciate your testimony today. Any questions for the testifier? I have one, Mr. Grove. So was your organization in opposition to the program when it was originally constituted, before, when the fees were a little less? Or I'm just trying to understand with a little more clarity the opposition. You characterized it as a money grab, so I just was trying to understand that.
Yes, we opposed it years ago, too, when this thing was first introduced. It was probably in 2014, 2012. Charlie Swanson was the director at the time of Sportfish. We opposed it then. We kind of got defeated, turned down, but I think a year or 2 years later, they reintroduced it. I guess we just didn't. I think they actually, no one really knew that they were passing it, to tell you the truth, or it came up again, and they finally did pass one, but it included everybody. It was $100 and a $200 fee. But it sunset. You know, I was surprised that it sunset a couple years ago and no longer had to pay this, you know, fee. And now all of a sudden, you know, here it is again. And hardly anybody even knows about it, to tell you the truth. I've been trying to get many guys to call in, but a lot of guys are busy. But so, you know, I don't know how many charter boat operators actually know that this is on coming down the pipe. So we've always opposed it, you know. And I'm really just shocked at the amount of money that they're trying to get out of us now for it too.
Thank you, Mr. Grove. Appreciate that testimony. That brings us back to committee discussion. I don't see anyone else on the line signed up to testify. Is there anyone in the room? Don't see anyone in the room here to testify. So I'll go ahead and close public testimony, and that brings the bill back before us. Commissioner Lang, Vincent Lang, could you respond to a couple of those comments? It is in the fiscal note a little bit hard to understand because the personnel services is listed as the 356,000, but then under operating expense it says the total estimated cost of continuing to support the saltwater vessel registration and logbook promo is 400,000. This does not include increasing costs in personnel or services. However, the division is attempting to mitigate these increases by encouraging guides to use a new electronic logbook system. So maybe you could just and then the next paragraph where it talks about the personnel costs and the processing there, I think it'd be good on the record to just provide a little clarity for that because of the concerns raised.
Okay, I can take a stab at it, then I can have Tom Talby address it a little bit more clearly. The cost of the program is more expensive than what we're trying to recover here. So we're at the goal of this thing is to basically recover most of the costs to run the program, and to the extent that we can make these books electronic, it's our hope over time that we can actually break even, if not save some money through the program. I understand the complaint or the issue or concerns regarding the federal requirements to get this money. And simply put, the federal government, if we backed away from this, the federal government will do it, but they will likely charge the charter boat anglers fees to basically put this program in place. So we feel as a state that we're much better off having control of this program, given that it's not only useful to the federal government in terms of meeting obligations, the Board of Fisheries has obligations that it's trying to do in terms of how it manages within state waters, at least for salmon treaty negotiations. So we see a real value in maintaining control of the data as we move forward in this thing. Tom, do you have anything else to add on the fiscal note?
Yes, this is Tom Talby, Deputy Director, Division of Sport Fish. Really, I think Commissioner Vincent Lang covered that the costs are basically, it barely covers the existing cost of the program, and that, we are really pushing forward with trying to get guides to be using e-log books, and that the e-log books primarily will be making the data available sooner than we currently get from the paper logbooks, which will benefit us not only for getting the halibut information compiled sooner to provide to the North Pacific Council, but also be providing king salmon information for Southeast Alaska much sooner, that we'd be able to utilize it within a few weeks of those logbooks being collected. So we are trying to streamline and make the program more efficient, and the costs are really, as Commissioner Lang stated, is that this is barely covering the costs of the full program.
And through the chair, this is Doug again. It's my intention to continue to go back to the federal government to try to get money from them to meet these, since a lot of these are federal obligations. Unfortunately, I have not been successful to that to date, but that's not going to mean that I give up, because I don't give up easily when it comes to trying to get money out of the federal government. So,
thank you, Commissioner. We have a question from Representative Hannon.
Thank you, Chair Tarr. So my questions go to the fact that the fees are doubling since guides last paid them in 2018 and the sun setting. And can you address whether that's because fewer guides will be participating, we're leaving out freshwater guides, or was the program undercharging substantially and it was taking a lot more general funds to operate the logbook program? And then I guess the third point, that if there are cost savings by people converting to electronic versus paper, would you anticipate the lowering the fees after a season?
Well, there's a couple questions there. First off, there were no general funds. Well, there were some general funds as a stopgap in this program. Right now, the entire cost of the program is paid for by Fish and Game Fund and DJ dollars. I think part of the reason the cost have increased is it was underfunded, and we were supplanting it with other funding sources, which was license dollars matched with Dingell Johnson dollars. Those dollars are becoming more and more competitive in terms of how we're doing business across the state. I think there is probably some reduction in freshwater costs, but again, I don't think that that's the main factor. I think the main factor in my eyes was when I looked at those numbers, we were supplementing the program, and it wasn't paying its cost. So we tried to design a program that was recovering most of the costs of the program. In terms of if we were to get a big chunk of money from the federal government, or we find out that there's a significant savings in terms of the making the logbooks electronic, yeah, I would be more than willing to come back and revisit this thing and pass those savings on back to the charter boat anglers.
Madam Chair, this is Director Rutsch. Deputy Director Tobby can correct me if I'm wrong, but even when we still had the freshwater program in place, we were still underfunded for this program. And so we had to look for other avenues to collect that money. So even though, you know, we no longer have that program in place, you know, now we're very underfunded.
Any follow-up?
Thank you, Chair Char. And since a lot of this data is driven by the data required that we need to get from logbooks is being driven by both federal treaty and federal regulation of halibut, can you tell me what other states, how will our logbook fees compare to what Washington is doing to collect both salmon and halibut data?
Well, so this is Doug. I know they have saltwater logbook programs, and they also have creel survey programs that they're running out of the state of Washington. I don't know. I have not looked at a state of Washington logbook in recent years, but I do know that when they're doing salmon treaty work, that they're either conducting dockside creel surveys in a combination with a logbook program for charter boat operators to try to collect that information. But I have not examined closely those logbooks, nor have I examined the relative cost of their program versus ours.
One follow-up?
Yes.
Commissioner, do you know, are any other states able to recoup any costs to run this data collection for the feds? Or we've been unsuccessful, but are any of the other treaty partners or halibut participants able to get federal dollars to help collect that data that is required by the feds?
I'm not aware of any state getting money on the halibut side. On the salmon treaty side, as part of the new ask that we're asking for Congress, we're asking for money to help fund our programs. Right now, the amount of money that came in mostly for Southeast Alaska Salmon Treaty went in towards mitigation and increased marking and hasn't gone in towards dockside reporting. So, but we are getting a little bit of additional money through the salmon treaty, which we're going to use to do some of the dockside sampling of sport fisheries, because this gives us the estimate of the harvest of animals, of fish, but doesn't give us the sampling in order to determine the stock origins of those fish.
Okay. Sure. Any other committee comments, questions? Okay. I just have one comment. There was an issue that came up in fisheries, and we're, in the interest of moving things along, going to decline trying to address that issue today. But I am just learning more about it, called the bare boat charters. So this issue is where lodges are renting all of the equipment necessary, renting the boat, renting all of the fishing gear to individuals who are staying at a lodge, and then they're able to go out and sort of bypass the halibut restrictions. Which is why where these logbooks are required through the Pacific, the halibut treaties and the Pacific Halibut Commission. and the Pacific Salmon Treaty. So that's an issue that there was discussion about in fisheries, but the bill moved along, and there was continued discussion about trying to amend the bill at this time with some kind of requirement for that. But in, as I understand it, in working with the department, there's just a goal of right now trying to get this bill as drafted move forward, but that acknowledge that that issue is still out there and that there's interest in trying to address it, because it's, if without any data on how many fish are being caught that way, it could be pretty impactful to the overall fisheries, and sort of, you know, basically sidestep the management goals that are, you know, people are trying to accomplish through having limits and then the logbooks to keep track of it. Representative Hannon, did you have a comment? Oh, okay. So I just wanted to bring that up. But again, at this time, I think we're not going to try to address that in the interest of moving this on. So we don't typically do this. We typically try to have the amendment deadline after the public testimony. But because of our evolving situation, our committee staff asked members if they had any interest in amending the bill. And we didn't hear from anyone. So if there are no issues or questions for the department, then the co-chair and I were interested in moving the bill today, if that's the will of the committee, so we can move this along and be situated for this to, you know, be ready to pass if we can continue working. Okay. Well, then, seeing no other questions, I would entertain a motion.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I move Fisheries Committee substitute for House Bill 218-31-GH2192/M from committee with attached fiscal note and individual recommendations.
Is there any objection? Okay. Seeing no objection, then House Bill 218 will move from committee today. Again, members, we will do our very best to keep in touch. I want to give a great thank you to our committee staff, to Rose and Thatcher, who are working so hard to keep everybody informed as the schedules evolve, and letting people know when we've had to cancel things. Just quickly, we'll comment that this week we had also had scheduled our climate impacts and adaptation hearings. And so if folks noticed, we had conversations scheduled to talk about invasive species, about fire response and a change in climate, and then oil and gas infrastructure on the North Slope and the changing climate issues. All of those presentations were canceled to prioritize our work for items that we're trying to get done if we should have to have an abbreviated session. So we're really focused on the main budget items and COVID response, and then a couple of these smaller pieces of legislation and confirmations. So we were disappointed to not be able to do that, and you know, if the schedule will permit at a later time in the future, we'll try to reschedule. But having said all of that, again, we will try to have one more meeting on Friday pending any new information to do our confirmation hearings. And again, we're very supportive of people participating by phone if that's what is necessary to keep everyone healthy. Any comments? Anybody else have any comments before we wrap up today? Okay. Seeing none, then this meeting of the House Resources Committee is adjourned at 1:40 p.m.